a film with three brains. It's 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 a film with three brains.
Oh my God, you guys are freaks.
Fast! Last night I cut the light off my bedroom, hit the switch, was in the bed before the room was dark.
Hello, and welcome to the film with three brains. This is Sean in Chicago.
And this is Cohen in Maplewood, New Jersey.
It's Sam in San Francisco.
That was like an old lady type monster.
Monster.
I did have kind of a Scooby-Doo villain sort of thing in my mind when I was thinking it.
Yeah, sure. I think you've achieved that. Yeah. Kudos.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to discuss a boxing documentary called When We Were Kings, released in 1996 after years and years of editing. And it concerns a fight in Zaire between Muhammad Ali and George Foreman. Much anticipation and such. And there's like a lot of hullabaloo. There's a lot of big musical acts there. And it's pretty much a straightforward documentary. Linear timeline. Oh, yeah. I mean, I didn't mean it. You know what? I didn't set out to pick another documentary, of course. It's been on my mind a little bit because, like, you know, we're doing movies. We're not really doing. We've done foreign language. We've done unusual stuff. So it's not like it's out of bounds or anything. But it's a little different for us. And it's also a little hard to find a bit of trivia on this stuff. There's not a lot of notes or anything.
Yeah.
So, Cohen, you said you've seen this. Mm-hmm. Sam, have you seen it before?
I have not. I remember seeing the pictures of the cover of the DVD like a zillion times and not even knowing what the movie's about. I just remember seeing it in the library and other places. And then I didn't know it was about the famous Rumble in the Jungle. So I think anybody who has ever heard of anything about boxing knows that fight exists. But I will admit, I didn't even know who Muhammad Ali fought for that or if he won. I knew going into this about it. All I remember is that term. I mean, I guess I could argue that I was 29 days old at the time of the fight, so I probably wasn't paying that much attention to it. It was like, if anything, if my mom was facing the TV, the chances were I was not facing the TV. So, yeah, I blame it on her.
Yeah, and if the fight had been, had gone ahead as scheduled, you wouldn't have been born yet.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
I can't
believe
that's
why they delayed it.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
This baby's going to need to see this.
Yeah, so it's old. I mean, you know, it's as old as us. And did anyone find out why it took so long to edit it?
Yeah. Well, it wasn't that it took that long to edit necessarily. It said it was tied up in a legal battle with Liberian financiers. There was some fighting over rights to it and that sort of thing, and maybe distribution. I don't remember exactly what the specifics were, but yeah, there was something. It wasn't just that the guy's a slow editor.
Yeah. But he was there in Zaire, I guess a couple months, something like that, just to capture this. I mean, I guess it was planned I don't know if it was planned strictly as a documentary or you know, what we ended up with, but certainly to capture all the, you know, the spectacle of the fight. I thought it did a really good job of that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of hard not to with the setting and the build up. And Sam, I didn't know exactly if he won this one either. I purposely didn't look it up. I wanted to try to be fresh. And there was like a few hints, it seemed like, early on that made it feel like they were like he wasn't going to win or something. Or
oh yeah,
sure. I felt like the documentary captured, I don't know if it was intentional, like in the editorial process they tried to lean into that a little bit. Yeah. But it definitely got the feeling, I mean, I knew he won, but you know, the documentary definitely makes it feel like there's a chance he might not, or there maybe really even was or was an underdog, or everyone expected him to lose. It's weird. Mm-hmm. It's weird seeing George Foreman young too.
Yeah. He was massive. I mean,
I know he was huge.
When you saw him next to Muhammad Ali, you're like, holy cow. Like, I mean, he was his wingspan. I mean, I didn't look it up. I guess I should have, but it just seemed like he was huge.
Yeah. When I was watching with my wife, and when we saw the young George Foreman for the first time, she said, oh, geez. You know, because she's only ever really seen him in the George Foreman grill commercials and things like that. And then she said, you know what he looks like? And I said, who? And she went, shit. Do you know who that is? it's an actor who is in, he's in The Wire, and he was in Parks and Rec, and he's well known for his, the way he says shit. Anyway, he's just an actor who looks like young George Foreman. Doesn't matter.
Okay.
Whose name I can't think of. But if you guys probably didn't watch it, but there's a Netflix series, a new one called like The History of Swearing.
Ooh.
Hosted by Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, Nicolas Cage. That's
each episode is a different word. Yeah. And the episode for shit features this guy pretty heavily. Anyway, he looks like him. I'm going to look up his name now because I'm curious. He's in a lot of stuff. You might recognize him. He's one of those guys who you're like, oh, yeah, I've seen him and stuff. And nobody ever knows his name.
I think of the many surprising things, the way that George Foreman cut his eye and the chaos that created was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think he said he ran into his elbow. He was, you know, he was doing this cut off the ring strategy and practicing with his sparring partner, who was a pretty decent sparring partner, but also like just, you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't think he obviously was. Well, he was in defensive position. And his elbow cut George Foreman's eye. I mean,
yeah,
it didn't look that big, elbow. But yeah, sharp elbow, enough to need stitches. And then, you know, I thought, oh, okay, a week, I don't know, a few days, 6 weeks later. I mean, that's a huge change.
Yeah.
And it made me wonder if like all the promoters and all the people that were there, I mean, they alluded to it a little bit, but it was like, well, what does, you know, I wanted to know a little bit more about that. Like, how did you pull that off? Right up, including the political thing, the Mobutu, you know, this leader that went to drastic measures to sort of to keep order while the fight was happening, had to, you know, keep that going another month and a half. And I mean, I don't know. I guess it's not the craziest thing that could have happened, but.
Well, I know. I agree with you. I think that this is a pretty short documentary. You know, just under an hour and a half. And there's a lot of things that get glossed over, and maybe we're this far in the future that we don't know the things. And maybe at the time for the person editing it, they're like, well, everybody knows this. I can skip, you know, or we can go short on it. But to me, I thought this movie captured a lot of other elements about what it was like to live at that time that I wanted to know a little bit more about, you know, like they didn't give that much detail about how he got stripped of his title when he refused to, you know, be part of the Vietnam draft. I think they could have gone into that. Like, was there controversy around that? Was it, you know, what did exactly happen and how much news did that make, you know? And then all of a sudden it's 10 years later and you don't get that real sense of time unless you're paying attention as to one of the reasons why this is a big deal, you know? And so I thought there was a lot of little things that you're like, oh, I want a little bit more. And maybe that's part of good documentary because you don't want to go overboard and be like, okay, you know, how many times I have to say the same thing. But at the same time, I thought there was plenty here for more information.
Yeah. It felt pretty free form. Like there wasn't a whole lot of structure to it other than it being linear chronologically. Right. It, you know, there wasn't a, yeah, it wasn't, It wasn't really built the way a lot of documentaries are. It just sort of like, it was like stream of consciousness almost. It just sort of was a camera set up capturing things and presented in that manner. You know, it doesn't dive too deep into, you know, some of the stuff it could have. Mm-hmm. And yeah, some of the things just felt like it just kind of, yeah, just kind of zipped through and you're like, oh, okay. All right. All right. That's cool. All right. What? Wait, it's 6 weeks later? That's the one thing that kind of got me.
Right.
George Foreman says, yeah, they say it's going to be 6 weeks. And there's a couple of scenes of Muhammad Ali. And then all of a sudden they're like, it's fight night. And I'm like, what? What? What'd they do for 6 weeks? What? Yeah. All right. Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And Sean, you hadn't seen it before, right?
I had not seen it before. And I had not even seen the cover or, I mean, I was vaguely aware that there was this thing that came out, but I mean, it won an Academy Award in 1996. Yeah. And I guess they were on stage, Foreman and Ali were on stage at that time. I don't remember watching that.
I don't really either.
I mean, not that I, you know, watch every single Academy Award ceremony with, you know, I mean, I do, I do now these days, but I guess back in the day I didn't. But yeah, anyway, wasn't aware of it. I didn't know whether or not he had lost before. And I looked that up after. Did you guys look up his record at all or any of that stuff?
No. Muhammad Ali?
Yeah.
No.
I mean, I could be wrong about this, but I think, I don't think he's ever been knocked out.
No, I don't think so.
He's been knocked down, but he's never been knocked out. And of course, he's, you know, he's pretty and he's like, it's because he never, no one can hit him and he, you know, floats like a butterfly, stings like a bee. He had the fight of the century was before this. And that was him and, why am I blanking on his name now? That sounds good, Joe.
That was Joe Frazier and Sonny
Frazier.
Liston.
Frazier, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he beat Liston early on in his career, well, sort of early. And then, he had all these epic battles with Joe Frazier, and he did have a rematch with George Foreman, I think. Or no, yeah. I'm thinking of Ken Norton. He also had some. Yeah, I mean.
I thought he didn't rematch.
You might be right. Yeah, I think you're right. How do you say that? Anyway, he lost. He had lost by decision, but even with Frazier, they fought a series of three times, and he won two of the three.
Yeah. And one of those was the thrill in Manila, right?
Correct. Yeah. But I think what's important is that he was out of boxing 3.5 years in the prime of his career.
Yeah.
It was his choice. And I think a lot of people look at that. They really admire him for sort of choosing his principles over his career.
Sure.
Whatever that meant. And I think he did know it was going to be bad, but I mean, that is why wasn't heavyweight champion, was because he was stripped of that title.
Yeah.
During that time. And then, 3.5 years of not really fighting, you can get pretty rusty. And then, so by this time, 74, he's trying to get back. He's still trying. I mean, he's had some fights. He 73, and I mean, I think it was his ban was less until 71. So, you know, he's back into it clearly, but I mean, just, you know, he's getting older now. Foreman's pretty young. It's just interesting that, I mean, I don't know how you guys feel about boxing in general, but the stuff I care about definitely concerns legacy and the backstory and the stuff almost as much, if not more, than the fight itself.
Yeah.
So I like a documentary because it can explain all the context, you know, and then you got George Plimpton talking about his, you know, all these strategies and him quoting Shakespeare and stuff like that, which was cool.
Yeah.
But all that stuff I loved almost as much, if not more, than the fight itself, because it's I guess if you're a fan of boxing, maybe that's why you watch it, because you know so much about it or know these fighters or whatever. But
it was interesting to see a young Don King and to hear people actually say something good about him. I mean, they also said he was terrible, but they also said good things. You know, it's definitely a very different image than the Don King you remember from the 1990s and Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
So that was, I thought, right. Interesting.
It was interesting seeing like the young hustler, you know, sort of like putting this shit together, promising, but basically saying, you know, I'll get you $5 million and then verbally agreeing. And then him having to go find $10 million to make it happen. It's kind of crazy.
It's pretty big cheese in the wind there for him.
Yeah.
It's pretty clever.
Yeah. I like that they said he was amoral. You know, He was very ambitious, very smart, very affable, all these things. You know, people liked him, but he was definitely amoral, or, you know, he didn't. He had a different set of values or code that he worked by than some people.
Yeah.
Than most people, I'd say. Yeah. But yeah, I think as a, not to get too far, excuse me, the social background of it, but the idea that you had two black men going to Africa to fight and playing up that aspect of it, that was pretty genius. I think that was the magic of what Don King did.
Yeah. Agreed. The soundtrack's pretty good.
Oh yeah.
Obviously, except the end song.
Oh, you didn't like that Rumble in the Jungle song?
No.
I thought it was fine.
I liked it. I don't know. I mean, speaking relatively, you get all this great blues and like Motown music throughout, and then you've got that.
Well, okay, I can agree with that, but as soon as I started listening to it, it's like, wait, I recognize these voices. That's Q-Tip. I'm like, oh, Busta Rhymes. Like, oh, I recognize. You know, I was like, you know what's so weird is that this is a song that's made with you know, really good musicians, and you know, and you're like, I don't remember it at all, and I don't think anybody remembers it since then. So then, and like, I even went on to Spotify and I was like, it's not there. I'm like, Spotify has like 5 billion songs and it does not have the Rumble in the Jungle song by, you know, Lauryn Hill and company.
Maybe it was the way they used it. Cause when you said that, I was like, yeah, that's what I remember thinking too. Like
No, go ahead. Sorry.
Well, just that, you got B.B. King, you got all these great, important, relevant artists actually playing while they were there. They were there to do this for the fight. And then, just the timing of it. It was something about, I wish I could remember what was playing when that song started. You know, the movie was wrapping up. And
I mean, it's basically the end credits.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It just, the tone shifted when that song came on.
Yeah.
The tone shifted when the credits started rolling.
Right.
The movie just wasn't the same once the credits started. I was really interested up until that point. And then I kind of tuned out.
And I got boring during that part. Came here grinding hall is so boring.
And it came up from the bottom, unlike the last movie. Yes.
Yep.
Yes. Okay, it's a good movie except for the credits in the song. There's a number of movies who have the worst song during the credits.
Yeah, not uncommon. Right.
James Brown and B.B. King, I think, both had better performances.
Mm. I thought it was a little odd when I was watching. I kept thinking, "Holy shit! How many musical montages can they cram into 87 minutes?"
Yeah, they did a pretty good job.
There was a bunch of them where they just let them basically the whole song play.
It's like, oh, okay. And the Succubus, man, that's what I walked away with.
Oh my God. Yes. That was a little, that was the only ham fisted thing about the documentary, I think, was that the repeated cutaways to this woman who just happens to look kind of freaky. Like when George Plimpton was talking about, being cursed or something, and then they show her. Like, all right, it's just some lady who's performing. I mean, geez.
I don't know. Yeah. I can relate. That's why I don't let people touch me. I'm like, I don't want them sucking the energy out of my soul. I might need it. Yeah. And then to see that that's how he lost. That
Yeah.
I think that's the real take-home lesson.
Yeah.
If you're a boxer, don't go to Africa and let zombie people touch you.
Zombie people.
Yeah, I mean, come on. That was part of the context of the show. In the show, she was a performer.
Yeah.
Right? I mean.
Yeah. I think so, yeah. I guess.
But the story was, I think, if I'm correct, the story was telling, or at least to George Plimpton, because it was sort of foreshadowing how George would lose or something. I don't.
Right. Well, yeah, George said that Muhammad Ali was with a tribe, and the shaman said that that the succubus is going to suck the energy out of George Foreman, and that's how Muhammad Ali's going to win. And so that's yeah. that's why they were joking about it during the fight when all of a sudden Foreman had no energy.
Right.
I got to say that was brilliant, because the way they do the fight and they have him talking, it's so, because I don't watch boxing. I don't know that much about it. And to see what's happening and have him say his thoughts like, oh, the fix is in. It looks like he's just, taking a beating, mm-hmm. I thought was really important, because to me, it's like, otherwise I wouldn't have understood. Like, I wouldn't have made that connection, like, and I definitely wouldn't have thought a fix was in, because it's each person takes home $5 million. Like, it's not like yeah. it's not like there's something really to split here yeah. or, fix. But still, just to hear him say it and all that, I thought, and when the way they did it was great. And then there, his realization, like, okay, here's a guy who watches boxing all the time, knows Muhammad Ali, knows his strategies, knows this and that. And he, too, is surprised at what Muhammad Ali is doing to win this fight, both with the right-handed punches and yeah. with the sucking all of his energy out.
Yeah.
He was great. It was, obviously the documentary is about that fight, but the way they shot it and the way they had those cuts, between him explaining it and what was going on, I thought was just awesome.
Yeah. I agree.
When I was watching this, and they were focused on the fight towards the end and all that stuff you're just mentioning, about wearing him out and everything, I kept thinking about Rocky III. I felt like Rocky III had Sylvester Stallone had to have been directly inspired by this fight more than anything.
He's inspired by a certain fight. I don't know if it's this one, but no.
I was just gonna say, because in Rocky III, when he fights Mr. T at the end, Clubber Lang. And Clubber Lang is just, he's basically like a young George Foreman. He's powerful. He's like a tank, and he hits harder than anyone else. And Rocky can't stand toe to toe and outpunch him. And so he just takes a beating. He leans on the ropes. He leans back. He's back in the ropes. He's yeah. getting hit. And then he's moving. And they're talking about, when Apollo Creed is training him, he's like, you got to dance. You got to be, light on your feet. You got to dance back and forth. You can't outpunch this guy. And it just reminded me of, and while we're watching the documentary, it reminded me of Rocky III a lot.
Yeah. Somewhere it said that Ali, he did an exhibition fight in Japan, I believe, with a big sort of martial arts / wrestler. I mean, they didn't say sumo, so it wasn't like that. But anyway, it was a big, novelty fight, and they credit that as one of the factors that led to MMA fighting. And sort of, now we have even mixed martial arts is kind of getting crazy with like Conor McGregor challenging. Who did he fight? He went
Mayweather, I think, right?
That sounds right. Yeah. Floyd Mayweather.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't see any of these fights, but I mean, definitely knew about it because it was such a big deal. The whole, like most sports, I think people that enjoy this stuff love talking about this stuff as much as watching it. Like the buildup is, oh man, there's no way he's going to beat him. And, anyway, I mean, just the idea that Ali could have had, far reaching effects. I mean, obviously socially there's a whole other topic we haven't touched yet, but that just the way he changed sports itself is pretty interesting.
Yeah.
But yeah, didn't McGregor just fight again
recently, a couple weeks ago.
He fought, I think, in an MMA fight, and I don't know, didn't go so well for him. Yeah.
I don't know.
I have a tiny anecdote about him. The agency I work for hired him to do a couple of Reebok commercials, and this is before COVID, and our crew flew out to Ireland to shoot with him, with Conor McGregor, near where he lives. And it was a 1-day shoot. It was a three-day shoot, 2 days of other stuff, and then 1 day with him. And on the day of, he just never showed up. And they kept texting his agent, and he was like, oh, yeah, he's coming. And by 5 o'clock, he's like, he's not coming. And so our whole crew had to fly back to the U.S. without having shot with him at all and just improvise and come up with a new plan because he just decided not to show.
Jeez.
Yikes.
Oh. Someone should beat him up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I want, you know, I guess that's maybe a part of being at the top of your sport and, you know, can kind of do what you want. I mean, if you're up and coming, you don't do shit like that. Right.
Well, no, not if you don't have endorsements lined up already.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're not going to shit all over like someone who's willing to give you $1 million for a day's work or whatever. I mean, it's not necessarily that much. I don't know, but yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's the same thing with like an actor who's been cast in a film. You know, if Robert De Niro wants to show up 4 hours late, what's anyone going to fucking say? But if you're some dipshit who's, you know, their first role, you're probably not going to want to be late.
Yeah. It's interesting that I guess this is a sign of the times or something, but I mean, you got George Plimpton, you got Norman Mailer. You know, I know that there were sort of avant-garde type journalists of the time. They were, you know, writers and novelists more than anything, but the idea that they would go to Africa to watch this fight and to write about it was interesting. And like, I think there's a clip of Plimpton like just writing stuff down on his little pad of paper. Like, didn't he have a tape recorder? I mean, I'm fascinated by that stuff, like old style journalism.
Yeah. You have to write something.
Yeah, but I mean, that means you have to remember it or at least write it down as perfectly as you can in real time. I mean, I'd be lost without a tape recorder. I don't know how you can get that right, because you have to get it right. You can't misquote these people.
Yeah.
Presumably. And I also thought it was interesting how Muhammad Ali, I mean, of course, he's a huge personality, which is as much of his legacy as his fighting almost. But I mean, he pretty much out-hyped Don King. You know, like, I think Don King was at the mic and saying something, and like, he's, you know, it'll be the greatest. And he's like, the greatest of all time, you know. And Don kind of laughs like, oh, yeah, right, all time. But I mean, that's I don't know if it was this. I watched a couple other things. I'll get to that in a second. But I think it was this one where he sort of talks about Gorgeous George, the wrestler. Was that in the documentary? I mean, kind of an inspiration. Maybe I'm thinking of something else.
I don't remember that.
So he watched Gorgeous George, and you know, he's a primping and preening wrestler of the day, and people hated him, but they paid to see him, and he repeats that in his Ali repeats that in his interviews, like, well, you know, I love him or hate him, they're paying tickets and they're coming to see him, and he very consciously, because if you look at there's some early interviews. Oh, well, I might as well say that I was just watching a little bit of HBO. Anton Fuqua did something called what's his name, or what is call him by his name? Shit. Anyway, it's a Ali documentary, and it starts way back. You know, it starts with his Olympic gold medal and his early days, and in his earlier interviews, he doesn't sound like the normal Ali we're used to. He sounds very just like a boy from Kentucky and pretty normal. And then once he gets this idea from Gorgeous George, he starts immediately. The next day, he was saying, I'm so pretty. I can't, all that stuff, that whole persona just went through the roof and people loved it, you know?
Sure.
And I think there's a lot of interesting things about that, but I think most people will highlight that he's a black man speaking his mind, you know, in the 60s and 70s and doing whatever he wants. I think did he just not sign his draft card? I think that's kind of how it started.
Yeah, he didn't report. I think, how'd that work? Like, he was drafted and then he just didn't go.
Yeah. But he was an objector. I mean, it was a position that he took. It wasn't just like, I'm not going to go. Or
right, right, yeah.
And it doesn't really say. Oh, the other thing I watched was One Night in Miami. I think that was Amazon.
And that's, the new one? The new movie? You watched it?
I did.
Is it good?
Yeah, it's all right. It's directed by Regina King, who is really hot right now. And it's pretty cool to see her directing because she was so awesome in Watchmen.
Yeah, she's awesome.
But it's based on a play. So it's, as a play, I think it's pretty good. It's the four of these guys in a hotel room in Miami right after he wins the fight against Sonny List in 1964. But it's like Sam Cooke, Jim Brown, Malcolm X and Cassius Clay. He's not even Muhammad Ali yet.
Yeah.
And so there's like all four of them are sort of digging at each other and it is good. And the performances are good. I think the guy that plays Muhammad is probably the best. They're all good. I mean, the guy that plays Sam Cooke really sings and can sing like crazy but then I think it's a little forced because they're trying to make it this moment, this formative moment for, you know, the civil rights movement. And it's really just four guys in a hotel trying to figure their shit out.
Yeah.
I mean, Jim Brown's pretty straightforward. He knows why he's there. But like Sam Cooke and Malcolm X kind of get into it and, but of course really respect each other. And then the main thing is that, Muhammad Ali or Cassius Clay is part of the Nation of Islam because of Malcolm X. And then Malcolm X comes out and says, I'm going to leave the Nation of Islam. And, you know, he's like, dude, I just got here. I just converted and all this stuff. And, more or less. He felt like he was a little bit abandoned. I don't know. It's good. It's a good character study and stuff, but all that background and stuff you can get from everything else too, because you know that they were, you know, there's pictures of them in Miami that night. And,
is it a true story? I thought it was fictional.
It's true story. And the basic facts are true, you know, that they were all friends, that that he was there after the fight, that they were trying to have this little after party. Of course, Malcolm X didn't want anybody to drink because of the Quran, but, that's all it is. It's just a little snippet. And I think it probably is supposed to show you different ways in which people, in which these guys have tried to, be part of this movement that they're not even sure is really happening, you know, like Sam Cooke is just, his thing is more like, I'm, you know, playing these gigs in the Poconos with all these white people and, you know, I'm singing these songs that there really aren't, they don't represent me, stuff like that. I don't know. I mean, I guess I don't know enough about his songwriting to really speak on that. But anyway, where was I? Wow. What the hell did I get here? I'm sorry, guys.
I don't know. I'm just, oh, hey, Sean's going off.
Go. Yeah.
As long as I have a point somewhere, I think that'd be good.
It's in there somewhere.
It's in there somewhere.
Our guests can figure it out. They have time to sift through it.
I'm like Jeffrey Lebowski. It's down there somewhere. Let me have another look. but I guess just the backstory is really cool and interesting, but I don't know how much of it is a little bit fictionalized as far as who did what when. And yeah, and then there's like a scene where he comes out, they come out to the, talk to the press, and he, at that point, he's just like, call me Cassius X. You know, he didn't even, he hadn't converted yeah. to Muhammad Ali at that point. But I mean, yeah, it's, you know, but to do all that, I think is the crazy thing is to be a black outspoken Muslim in America, in Kentucky, you know, even though he, I mean, he, I think what maybe the best part of that show or some of these things were that highlighted how aware he was, that he was a symbol, that he was part of something. He knew what he meant to other people beyond boxing.
No, it's true. I mean, he received the Martin Luther King Jr. Award for his draft refusal and for being a leader. You know, not only that. I mean, other people were protesters, but he was a famous person who gave up, as you said, he gave up the best years of his career. In essence, to protest.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, not many people leave during their prime to make a social statement.
Indeed.
Yeah. So, there are no double ups in this movie.
Cinematographer? I have no idea.
Yeah, probably not.
No, but Taylor Hackford is, you know, an established, successful movie maker.
Yeah.
This won the Academy Award, but he also won he was nominated, I mean, for Ray.
Yeah.
Dolores Claiborne.
Oh, yeah.
Decent enough movie. Devil's Advocate. All mm-hmm. right.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Officer and Gentleman. Pretty well received.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. He was also the executive producer on Rooftops.
Oh, I saw that. I was gonna tease you about that. Thanks for reminding me.
Good old Rooftops.
Hell yeah.
Oh shit.
When you guys were talking about George Plimpton and Sean, I think, you know, Norman Mailer and the journalist writers were there. They reminded me that Hunter Thompson was also there to cover the fight, but he didn't go.
Oh.
Yeah, he just decided, he hated boxing, so he decided he didn't want to go watch it, so he didn't.
That sounds like him.
Yeah, he was there with Ralph Steadman, the illustrator. They were there for Rolling Stone, and Ralph Steadman was like, are we going to go or what? He's like, no, I don't want to go see, you know, two dudes beat each other up or whatever. And then Ralph's like, well, I'll go. Where are the tickets? And he said, I sold them.
Oh, man.
So Ralph Steadman watched the fight from his hotel room.
Sold them for some mescaline or something. Or yeah. God knows what.
He flew all the way to Zaire to cover it. He's like, that's fucking, I'm not going to go. Yeah.
Yeah, well, and he waited. I mean, I wonder if he knew it was postponed already. It came from the fight.
I don't know. Yeah.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, it was weird to see James Brown with facial hair. Did you guys notice that?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess, I don't know why I picture him without facial hair, but.
Yeah. He's so, God, awfully sweaty, too. Just glistening. It was gross.
Yeah.
He's performing.
Did you notice B.B. King kind of did his move? I assume B.B. King, if this was the same show, B.B. King would probably open for James Brown. But he did the, like, falling down kind of thing. B.B. King was like, oh, you know, at the end of one of the songs.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, James Brown is like put the cape on him. He's the hardest working man in show business and very theatrical.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, Ali Boumaye.
Which means what? Kill him?
kill him.
Yeah. I think it does, right? Is that what they said?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
It's kind of suck for George Foreman to, you know, like he's like, I'm a black man. You know, he's just sort of like, bewildered at this whole like love for Ali. I mean, the only thing that made sense was the reference to his German shepherd. It was like, well, the Belgians had police dogs that were German shepherds. So they were like, eh.
Well, it was great that they were interviewing that guy because, I mean, just to show like how small the world was then, that the word wouldn't get out that George Foreman is a black man, that people were surprised when he gets off the plane. Like, that's like that sort of thing is unthinkable today because we have video of everything everywhere, you know, even going to Africa and doing medical work there, I can tell you that you can be in the middle of nowhere and people will pull out a cell phone. Like, they have all got like the access is there. And so it just seems so strange for him to be like, and they didn't even know I was black. Like,
yeah,
it's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, like the carrier pigeon didn't say anything about this.
Right.
Yeah, that's
all right.
All right. That sounded like a let's wrap it up.
All right. I was going to say, all right, who should watch this?
Ah, good question.
I think just about everybody.
Pretty much.
I think if you're like 12 years old, you're fine. Yeah.
Oh,
that's interesting.
My other thought was that, you know, like One Night in Miami, things like that, they play up it's theatrical the way that they play up their words. You know, obviously they're trying to get tug at your heartstrings, that sort of thing. But I just love watching the actual footage of people themselves, you know, not somebody portraying them. Mm-hmm. You know, the way that, you know, he doesn't pull any punches when he said, stuff about, I can't remember what he was talking about. I don't know. Just overall the being, you know, as far as being in the moment, especially if like a time capsule like this,
mm-hmm.
is so much better than watching somebody's version of it. Even, and I'm, don't get me wrong. One Night in Miami is good. I liked it a lot, but it didn't touch me in the way that watching the documentary did.
Mm-hmm.
I felt kind of moved toward the end, but then that song at the end kind of killed it.
back to the song. Hey, you know, Muhammad Ali's credited with one of the first, is possibly the first rap album.
Really?
No. Yeah, that he made an album in which he's talking to the song Stand By Me along with some other songs. And it sold over 500,000 copies. He was nominated for a Grammy back in the 60s. And some people say that's the first, that's the true first rap album.
So wow.
Some people, not all people.
Yeah, that may be giving him a little too much credit.
he did have a way with words.
He did. He was, yeah, I wish I could remember half of the poems he said. They were great.
Yeah.
Just in this one, it was.
He was very rhymey.
Oh, man. No, you are right. It's a great time capsule, and it's also the sort of thing that you're like, okay, someone's going to look at this at some point in the next 5 or 10 years, and they're gonna be like, we need to make a pseudo, you know, documentary remake of this, and it'll probably be done really well, and it'll do well at the theaters, mm-hmm. and it, you know, won't have everything that this has, but this is. This seems like the perfect sketchbook for a remake of, you know, inspired by true events, you know, or
yeah,
yeah,
you know, I'll have someone else being Muhammad Ali.
I think the only violence is in the fight itself, right? There's not really any crowd disturbance. I mean, they talk about the violence of rounding some people up and shooting them, that sort of thing, but
yeah.
But I mean, as far as a kid's watching it, you could be a 15, 16 year old. And if you're interested in it, I don't think it's inappropriate for you.
No, not at all.
So remake, age. Yeah, I don't know. Do you think there's ever going to be anything like this? I mean, like just what we've been talking about, the weird, you know, the communication of the time and the. hoopla of, and the weirdness also of the whole thing, you know? I mean, do they even do fights like this? Do they still schedule a fight in, you know, a crazy place? And
yeah, I think they do.
It's not all in Las Vegas and Atlantic City?
No, I don't think so. I don't know. It seems to me that they probably would just to generate inherent interest in something that's out of the ordinary.
They mentioned blood on the floor of the arena. And I wasn't really sure if how, I mean, because we couldn't actually see it, but they, I don't know.
Yeah, I didn't know if that was supposed to be literal or more metaphorical.
I think it was supposed to be literal because I think they were saying that there were actual battles in that arena for some, but I don't know what the hell that would be. I mean, this isn't gladiators. They don't have, you know, I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah.
Do you like movies about gladiators?
Yeah. Yes, and but I don't want to see a grown man naked. All right.
Don't open the mail I sent you.
Shoot.
All right. You want to know what we're doing next?
Yeah.
Sure do.
Uh-huh.
So I will tell you that it's an overlap with, it's got a double up in the filmmaker. And okay. I decided that I was going to go back in time since I felt like we hit the 90s and 80s. We hadn't hit in the 70s in a while. At least I don't remember that we hit. No, I can't.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Maybe we didn't. So anyway, it's like, I'm going to go back to the 70s, find a movie, see what was good back in like 1975, 1976. And then I came across this movie. I was like, oh, there are some boxing movies that came out during those years. And I wasn't looking for a boxing movie, but the movie that I did want to find doesn't exist anywhere. So the movie that I was interested in was a movie called Mr. Klein, which is a French movie about a guy who shares the same name as a Jewish man. And this is obviously, it's set during World War II Nazi occupation. Mm. And the guy needs to get out of this sticky situation. So anyway, it could see it was remastered and all this stuff and a couple of years ago and had good reviews, but it's showing nowhere. Like, you have to order the DVD. So then I was looking at the other movies that came out right around the similar time, and a boxing movie came out that was directed by Walter Hill.
What's his name? Wow.
My Charles.
Brain, Charles Bronson? Is that Hard Times?
Yes. Yep.
Is that your
You've
pick?
Seen it?
Yeah, I've seen it. It's good.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I like that movie. It's pretty good.
Yeah. It has good reviews.
It's not really a boxing movie.
it's a fighting movie.
Yeah. Okay. It's like bare knuckle fighting. It's more like Fight Club than...
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. No, it's good. Yeah, I like that movie. That's a good pick.
Cool. Charles Bronson territory. Interesting.
Yeah, well, that was the other thing that got me. I was like, Charles Bronson. I'm like, how can we not have a Charles Bronson movie?
I didn't realize Walter Hill directed that, though. That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it doesn't have Vendetta or anything in the title. It doesn't have...
What?
Right. What did you call it? What is the movie called again?
Hard Times.
It's called Hard Times.
Hard Times. It's not Death Wish anything or.
No.
Yeah.
I don't think so. Unless it has a subtitle. I think the subtitle is Cock Punch, actually.
That was his secret movie. Yeah.
Indeed.
And because they didn't have the internet or a way to tweet what happened at every fight, he could get away with it over and over.
Right.
Yeah. I think it takes place during the Depression. That's why it's called Hard Times, I believe.
Yes.
Okay. That, okay. Good. We got some kind of context.
It's nice we could get in some below the belt
humor
before signing off.
Definitely.
This was our best review.
Oh, our finest. Our finest work here. Definitely.
Indeed.
Sweet.
All right. All right. Adios.
Eight, nine, ten. It's all over, folks. Well, I cracked myself up anyway. That's
great. For some reason, I was, when you counted, I don't know why, but it reminded me of playing, I forgot the name of the, it was a game I used to play at Mike Norton's house on there in television. It was like a baseball game. It's called like Major League or something.
Oh, God, we're here again.
And every time you struck out or flied out or whatever, you got out, it'd go, you're out. And when you counted that, I don't know, for some reason, I thought it when you got to 10, you were going to go, you're out.
Yeah. All right. Well, we've mentioned this before. It's Major League Baseball by Intellivision, right?
Is it? We have talked about it before.
Yeah, way back. Yeah. Well, like our third episode or something. That was like over a year ago.
I don't even remember.
Yeah.
Aren't we seasoned veterans? I don't even remember episode 3.
Well, yep. Thanks for listening.
See you next. Sam already left.
Yeah, he's gone. I think he's with the dogs.
Yeah. It's the Film With Your Brains. Need a tweezers and a magnifying glass.